theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
The eagle has landed, so is Quinn. How are you doing today, honey?
Doing great, my love. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm excited for this conversation because this is something that I think is really relevant to the world today.
Yes.
And I do think that it's going to be something that is going to be important for us all to kind of turn up a little bit into 2022 and 2023.
Yeah.
Because this is the reality of the world. We're getting more globalization. We're getting more connected. Everything can be done online more so than ever in the history of planet Earth. And in doing so, we got to figure out how do we balance our privacy and personal security.
Yeah, 100%. This is a topic I'm super excited to talk about today because it's something that I have had my concerns about for a very long time. I've done a lot of research in this space, and I know you have too.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what's interesting is a lot of times when you hear, you should be really protecting your privacy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, I don't care. I have nothing to hide.
Yeah.
No. Privacy, your privacy is actually one of your natural rights.
Yeah, I think
you have to remember how important privacy is. Like,
right.
If you're talking, you know, if you're writing down in your journal and then all of a sudden everyone got to see exactly what was in your inner thoughts, like, that wouldn't be very nice, would
it? Not
right?
At all.
Some people would say, I don't really care, but you just never know
mm-hmm.
how far this can go. And trust me, there are some serious dystopian scenarios that we may or may not cover today about mm-hmm. what can happen if you really don't care about your privacy,
right.
And they're not good, and they're actually more realistic than ever before.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk about this.
Well, I mean, in general, the value of our data is really high. Data is the new oil that we're all mining.
We are in the information age, 100%.
The reason why Google is worth as much as Google's worth, or Facebook too, is because they know so much about us.
They have the data. They have the information.
It's debatable, and I talk to my students about this. It's debatable if we know ourselves better than Google knows us. Which one is better at predicting our future history? Well, we know everything that we've done, and Google only knows so much about what we've done. But at the same time, Google never forgets what we've ever searched for or what an email we've ever written on Gmail. It keeps all that information. And so it really, I've been reading this book, and this book has kind of been opening my eyes up to thinking about how much do I really feel as though I need to be more protective? How much do I feel as though I'm comfortable, you know, being loud and proud about, you know? And so for one, we have our little friend Alexa and the Echo in the corner of the room. I had to say it quietly because I didn't want it to go off.
Yeah.
And then in the other room, we have our friend little Google in the bedroom. And they're always listening for me to say those magic words and then answer back with the reply to my question.
Yep.
And that's almost a weird thing that we're that comfortable to have someone or something listening, a company, an almost institutionalized corporation being able to capture that audio data that we have in the room today.
Oh yeah.
And now we're seeing new security systems where they're inside the house. A lot of these new devices, they actually have a camera on them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of creepy. I mean,
Loco.
Something that you, when we're thinking about Big Brother, you're inviting Big Brother into your house. You're actually paying for Big Brother
you're
to
paying.
Be in your house.
Yeah.
And it makes you think a little bit like how necessary is it to have them here? Is it more beneficial for us to not? Oh, and I forgot, our cell phones.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Siri's always waiting.
Yeah, and if all you got to do is say, hey, Siri. And then all of a sudden, bing, 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 what do you want to know, Jonathan?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like anything. So if they're always waiting for me to say that, that means they're always listening. So privacy is an interesting thing. Apple does have a very solid brand on as far as protecting that privacy, which is another thing that we can have a discussion on.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to start this discussion off by introducing you to the book that got me all hyped up on this. And the book is called The Art of Invisibility.
Ooh,
the world's most famous hacker teaches you how to be safe in the age of Big Brother and Big Data by Kevin Mitnick. And this is not the book that I honestly intended to read. As I'm getting into it, I'm like starting to realize this guy goes extreme, as maybe you should expect from the number one hacker. But at the same time, I'm not trying to go extreme. I'm just trying to set my privacy game to the next level.
Yeah.
You know, take it up a notch where I'm being more protective.
Yeah.
And this book kind of showed me the extreme, and I'm just trying to go a little bit more as I'm trying to ensure that my valuable thoughts and ideas, however valuable they may be, are protected a little bit more.
Well, I think what's interesting is that we're living in a time and an age where this has never happened before, that it's actually more difficult to be extremely private than ever before.
Right.
If you are just a normal average person using, you know, the internet, your phone and all of these things, you don't even have to have like the home devices, but just like a normal human with a Facebook profile and an iPhone in your pocket and a computer that you use on a daily basis, you are so susceptible to not being private. Like, you are not private at all.
Yeah,
you definitely need to know that. And so the key is I'm really excited to hear about what he says in this book, but all I'm saying is, he's super extreme. And I know there are a lot of other people who are super extreme. I've read and followed a lot of them too. And that's like not what we're trying to get convince anyone to do. I think that what you're trying to do and what I'm hopefully going to do after this too with you is try to figure out how to take it up just a little bit, just a notch. You don't want to get hacked. You don't want to get your identity stolen. You don't want to get, you know, there are certain things where it's going to actually make your life a whole hell of a lot harder if you don't just do some basic things to protect your privacy.
And some of them are easier than others. In all honesty, it does require a bit more work, but your privacy and your own security is worth it. And I think that's kind of the big point that I'm trying to make with this episode specifically.
Yeah. You don't want to be stupid. You know, I think that, you know, when you connect to a public internet, it's the most susceptible you're ever going to be.
Yeah.
Anyone can hack in. Like, and you don't need to be a hacker. You don't need to understand code. You just need to know that that is like a serious thing that you should be concerned about.
That's their full-time gig.
Full-time.
That's all they do is they target individuals and then they attack.
It's too easy.
Well, I don't know how easy it is, in all honesty, but
for some
people, it's easier than others, and we're just trying to make it not easy for all of our listeners.
If that's all it is. Does that make sense? 100%. I'm just saying all you got to do is go into like San Francisco downtown. There's free internet. Everyone's connected to it, and someone's going on their bank account right then and there on the free internet.
Yeah.
That's really bad. Like, just disconnect from the internet. You just got to be careful. And there are just things that it's inconvenient. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So you want me to just start laying out some things that are inconvenient, in all honesty?
Yeah.
So let's start with just the term passwords. Passwords. Yeah. Everyone's got their own password, right? How creative is your password? People forget passwords all the time. So how do you never forget your password? Well, you make it super easy so that you'll never forget it. That's a problem. If it's super easy, for instance, if it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, any of those numbers in that order, that's a big problem. If it has A, B, C, D, E, F, G, that's a problem. If your password is the word password, that's a major problem. Remember when you could actually get away with that? Nowadays, you have to have, you know, minimum amount of 8 characters, capital letter, lowercase letter, a number, and some special character as well, you know, at least 2 or 3, whatever. That's a lot more than it used to be. And now they're trying to this book specifically is trying to get you to step that game up even more so. They don't want you to have a single phrase, like a single word password. They want it to be like a sentence, like a proper sentence where it's at least minimum, this is what he says, 25 characters. 25 characters.
Dang.
So it's one thing to have just a few words, but to step it up, you got to make it much longer. And to integrate where it's not just like a sentence, but you're integrating within it the numbers and the digits. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I would say that like passwords is probably like step number one, but I think it's the one thing, and I'm included in this, that it's like, oh my God, I have so many passwords. Like how many accounts? I have so many different passwords. How am I supposed to remember all of the different things?
Yeah.
And honestly, I think there are a lot of that. That's an interesting technique, actually. And it actually makes it more random than if you were to just use the same like sequence of numbers and a couple of words.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's super random. Like, say it's like a lyric from your favorite song. Yeah. Like, how are they going to know that? Like, it's not, at least even just using your birthday. Don't ever use your social security.
Yeah.
Using your phone number, all of those things are easy to look up.
Yeah, or like pets' names and stuff. They can find that.
Yeah.
They can find all that information. Your mother's maiden name.
Yep.
They can find that online.
Yep.
It's not that difficult according to this book. And so you really got to take the time to come up with something that is significantly longer, because I know most of our listeners do not have 25 characters as a password. So if you can get 25 characters of a password, lay that down, and then at the next point, you actually got to integrate some numbers and special characters into that. That's where it gets pretty challenging, yeah, because it's one thing to make a sentence, but it's another thing to integrate numbers and symbols within it.
Yeah, that would be really hard, especially, you know, if you're adding just one other character, mm-hmm. right? Like a one or an exclamation mark.
Yeah.
But then you don't want, you can't replicate that password for every single account that you have.
Yeah.
So then it's like, okay, well, I know it was one for this one. And then is it two for, it starts to get crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it is you difficult.
Just, you just unintentionally brought up the second main point, which is you can't have the same password for everything.
No, you can't.
You got to have different passwords for all your different accounts. Dude, it's getting difficult to remember all that, you know? And so some that he suggests that you actually have a password manager or password safe that allows you to have a password that you use to get into your codes for all your passwords. And so that could be electronic. You could even have it in paper format in a safe or something where you can actually see exactly what your passwords are. But that's getting a little complicated, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, there are several different platforms, businesses that are really trying to specialize in becoming like your password
holder. Yeah.
But I mean, come on, how don't you see like that is the exact perfect target for any hacker to just like really, and of course
then
they
get the whole keys to the castle.
And they got your everything. They got everything. So you're centralizing all your stuff in one spot.
Right.
And now all they need is that one password from you.
Right.
And now they have everything. And so it is scary. But I mean, if you're saving your passwords on Chrome, you're kind of doing the same thing. All someone has to do is hack into Chrome and like, all right,
there's going to be there's going to be some new innovation in this. I'm confident about that.
There has to be.
The other thing that came up fairly recent that he's kind of suggesting we utilize as well is when you're logging in, let's say on Chrome, it suggests a password for you and it makes a random set of numbers and letters put together in different order, capitalization, some are lowercase, etc. And it says, use this password and we'll save it for you. Which there's a pro to that is that that's a really long, complicated password that you normally couldn't create. But the negative aspect of it is it's impossible for you to ever memorize that. And if you want to log on a different device, not using Chrome, then you're going to have to go back into Chrome, figure out what that password is, copy that, and then, you know, retype on those random numbers and letters into your own personal, you know, cell phone or whatever it is that you're trying to log in on. So that's another way, but it hasn't been perfectly figured out. And what's your thoughts? Do you think that's a good suggestion? Because I recognize the value of having a really complicated password, but then it makes it inconvenient for you when you're trying to go from device to different device.
It really is, especially if you're constantly like back and forth on your mobile phone and your computer, mm-hmm. and maybe you have a couple of different, you have a laptop and you have a desktop and you have all these, you have a work computer and you have, you know, I think to me, I'm very skeptical of anything that centralizes all your information.
Yeah.
And so if Google is offering you basically like an encrypted password that like they just generated randomly.
Yeah.
Here you go. Well, they just gave it to you. Now, like they own it, you know? Yeah. And that's kind of, it's difficult. And there are other random password generators out there. There's a lot of things that you can do. It's hard. It's not very convenient to stay private.
Yes. But if you can step it up a little bit, I mean, if you're currently making passwords that are like 8 or 10 characters, maybe it's not too bad for you to go up to 12 or 13 or transition from going from a single word to maybe a phrase, like a longer sentence, you know? And I think that's a good way to just step it up a little bit more.
A little bit. Yeah. I'm of the mind. I really like hard copies. I like analog. Mm-hmm. So if you've got something like, say you have a planner or a calendar that you bring with you like everywhere, like for me, it's easy because I have a purse, right? Yeah. So if I have something with me that I usually take with me, home, work, whatever, mm-hmm. and I have all my stuff there. Now the, like you almost start creating your own codes too, which is interesting. Like, okay, so what's my Facebook password? Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm not going to put Facebook password username. I'm going to probably make it so it's a little bit more difficult for someone to just look at this and know that it's my password.
Yeah. So in the example that the book gave, he said, if your password was for Bank of America, don't label it Bank of America. Yeah. Maybe label it cookie jar.
Yeah.
And cookie jar emphasizes that it's like a bank, like don't get, you know, pull your little cookies out of the jar.
That's,
you know,
cool.
Like your money. And so if you can think of it that way, that's a really good way of having your passwords private, where if someone did take it, they wouldn't even know where to start, perhaps.
Yeah.
I mean, but if they have your email, they can try a million different places really quickly. So you just got to be really careful with it all.
Yeah.
You don't want to... Don't want to lose your cell phone. Do not lose your cell phone. If you lose your cell phone, immediately turn that cell phone off. Like, set it up so it's like completely disconnected from the system, because the last thing you want is someone to be able to get in there and find all your stuff.
Yeah.
Now, one could argue, well, it uses biometrics. You know, it uses my thumbprint. It uses my face. Supposedly, according to this book, that the thumbprint can actually be hacked. Like, if you do it the old-fashioned way with, you know, the baby powder and they capture someone's fingerprint, they have been able to get into someone's phone using that. Second thing is with the face, the guy said that they've been able to get phones unlocked by using a really great high-definition picture. I've yet to try that out. But if he's saying that it's possible, that's a little bit, yeah, it's definitely concerning.
Yeah.
And so you just got to take it a little bit further, and perhaps
that's so smart, actually.
Yeah, perhaps the suggestion is using a two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. And what is that? Well, if you go to an ATM, you're already doing it. If you go to an ATM, you have to have a card. That's one. Mm-hmm. And then you have to know your PIN code to get in there and be able to pull money out. That's two-factor. If you're unlocking your phone, one, you could set it up where it needs your face and passcode as well. But it all depends on if you're willing to do that. He also suggests that you never do a 4-digit passcode. He's like, go 7. Mm. So he does take to an extreme. But I think it's actually good suggestions. And the more complicated you can make it, the more difficult it is.
Yeah. I think that the truth is, in what you're describing are like little things that you can change, right? And I think that these little changes that you can make, annoying at first, mm-hmm. maybe, right? If you're like, oh, God, I know this is what I need to do, but I don't really want to do it. It's annoying. Just start doing little by little. And I promise you, once you set up your system to like really feel like, okay, look, I want to get secure. I got money over here. I got this. It would be devastating if something happened to it.
Yeah.
And so preemptively, you're trying to protect that, right? And as you start doing these little moves, you start actually kind of like creating your own little process of privacy, your privacy process. And once you start kind of doing it over and over again, it becomes natural and normal, I think, you know, you listen to these guys who are extreme, they have these processes to protect their privacy that are super high, like level, but they didn't start off doing that.
No way.
That came over time, more and more and more. And so I think for people listening, and especially for even me, I'm thinking about this, you know, the two-factor authentication, that's pretty much like, also, if you log into your email, they won't let you in until you basically type back in the code that they texted to your phone. So your phone now becomes
two-factor authentication. Yeah. So the other thing that I want to bring up, which I think you'll find very fascinating, is do you remember seeing those phones? I think it's Samsung, where it just presents to you 9 different dots, a 3x3 box.
Yeah.
And you put your finger on it and you draw like a little symbol to unlock the phone. He said that it was presented at like a hackers conference, how easy or what the most typical designs are that people use. And so the first piece of advice, if you are using that, is most people don't use the outside dots as much and almost always go to the center dot, like more often than anything else. So if you can, try to use the outside dots more often.
Hmm.
And second, it's often found that people will do the shape of the letter of their name. So if it's like a J, they'll do a J or an L or something like that. And so don't do that. And it's interesting that they're able to narrow down like the most typical, you know, patterns of people opening up their phone just by drawing it with their thumb. So think a little bit more complicated. Think out of the box. Don't do normal, typical password entry ways. You got to think about how you can be different, which is just going to provide you with further security.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think... as more and more technology gets developed, we're talking about like kind of twofold, right? We're talking about privacy and the data that companies are able to gather about you and centralize and be able to use for building their own business, right? That's one thing. We're not talking so much about that. We're talking a lot more about how to protect your own accounts that you already
personal,
have. It's
definitely.
A little bit more personal, which I think is going to be honest. I think that we all can agree that obviously there's been a lot of other breaches and hacks and everything like that, even with like, you know, TransUnion, like some of these like, you know, credit companies.
Yeah.
And you can't rely on these centralized institutions to really protect you yourself.
Right.
Right? And there's not really any insurance. Like if someone steals your identity, it's a really horrible process still.
Yeah.
And so to just take it on yourself is a really kind of, it feels kind of daunting, but the sooner you do it, the better, because you're just going to get used to it and it's become part of your routine. And as innovation and technology expands more and more into like every single field, you really got to have some sort of a plan together to make sure you don't get hacked.
So when we were talking about two-factor authentication, another way, one way that you brought up was with your email, you can set it up so that you get a text message to verify that that's you. And then you type in the passcode that you received from your text message into your email, and then it unlocks it for you. That's two-factor.
Yeah.
One problem with that is that there's been a lot of recent hacks where hackers will pay someone who works in the phone company to give them a SIM card, a copy of their SIM card. And then when someone's doing two-factor authentication, it allows them to get the PIN code, and that allows them to get into their bank account.
That's awful.
And that's really horrible. And there's some horrific stories of, you know, in all honesty, it's quite often like high school kids that have been able to take hundreds of thousands and total millions of dollars from bank accounts, and then once they transition it to some kind of crypto coin, then it disappears.
It's gone.
And it's completely gone, and you can't trace it, you can't find it. They may go to jail, but they, if they have that key somewhere, when they get out of jail, technically they would be able to, you know, pull that money back out, which is horrible. So what they suggest is that you actually use a different two-factor authentication, like the Google app, and for two-factor authentication, and then there's another one.
Yeah, these applications are called authenticators, okay?
Oh,
and
yeah,
Google has one that's called a Google Authenticator, but I'm not a big fan of it, and clearly not a lot of people on the app are either. So on the App Store, it had really bad reviews. So I didn't really understand why some of these, you know, companies were suggesting it, but there's one that I would suggest that I use, and I think it's so, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this app called Authy, A-U-T-H-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what it does is it's an authenticator, and you've got like 10 seconds. It basically randomly generates a code
mm-hmm.
that you have to use your face and your password, your PIN to get into.
Yeah.
And you basically have to scan a QR code. So like, for example, I did this today on a bank account, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to basically, all you have to do is scan the QR code with the app
mm-hmm.
and it connects your account, right? So it's connected to it. So anytime that you want to log in,
you first type in
your password, and then you basically get notified. You have to open the Authy app. The Authy app will notify you saying, hey, someone's binging. This account is binging. Here's your code.
Mm-hmm.
You open it up again. Before you can see the code, you have to have your face and or the password to get in. And then you have literally 10 seconds to type that. Like, I think it's 7 digits.
Seven digits.
Okay. And
so that's really going beyond two-factor. Because if you're having to show your face and your own phone passcode, now you're actually getting to like a 3-4 factor authentication.
Well, no. Okay. With Authy, you don't have to do that. But I would recommend that you do.
Oh, okay. So this is a further thing.
Yeah,
that
especially
you do.
If you're getting into anywhere in the cryptocurrency space. Like, this is really, really important.
Yeah. And I think in general, anything to do with money, if it's a bank
account,
anything
to do with finance,
if it's stocks, if it's anything that where maybe you're more vulnerable. I would even say, like, with email too, not necessarily like daily checking email, but if you're logging in on a new computer or something like that, I think that's a good idea to be able to have a further level of security.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting too that they use the variable of time. So to me, at least, so you have literally 10 seconds to type this in. And if you don't type it in within 10 seconds, it erases completely. It's completely invalid. And then it automatically generates a new one. And you have 10 seconds to put it in.
Yeah.
And so it's you have to do it really quickly. You got to be on it. It's not like, you know, you're waiting for a text message. It's basically, it's a whole different kind of a process and system. But I do really recommend, if you're using an authenticator, to just go that extra mile, because you are basically adding another additional layer of security if your authenticator app requires your biometric, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not comfortable with the biometrics, some people aren't, then use the password and code. It's just one extra layer of protection. But the authenticator is something that you can connect with a lot of different apps, not just finance either. I mean, you can connect it with email accounts are doing it now. Social mm-hmm. media accounts are doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of different ones. And so if you, you know, like rather than, you know, using your phone.
It more difficult for others to hack you.
Yeah. Well, and interestingly enough, just thinking about this, when John and I travel or live abroad, usually we don't have a SIM card. We usually don't have a phone. We only have the internet, right? And so a lot of those text messages that have the two-factor authentication that go to your phone, it won't work. It won't, because it's a green text message on an iPhone, right? So it won't actually go through. So the authenticator app is actually probably one of the only ways you can safely do that internationally if you don't have a phone, if you're only hooked up onto Wi-Fi with your phone, which is what we usually do.
Right.
If you have a SIM card, then it's probably not a big deal, but...
Yeah. So all we're trying to do is get you to step your game up a little bit. And it's not easy. It's a little bit of a challenge. But I will tell you a little bit more about the book because he was really providing a whole new level of setting up privacy. I mean, the book is called How to Be Invisible. And when I think about the term being invisible, I think about what Edward Snowden had to deal with to literally be erased from planet Earth so that, you know, he wouldn't get arrested and go to jail.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, so if you're trying to be invisible, it's actually really, really hard to do nowadays. You have to be having, you know, well, a newly set up phone or a newly set up computer that you're only using for certain aspects of things. If you're trying to get completely invisible, it's actually really difficult, and you can read this whole book and learn all about it. I'm not trying to make you invisible. I'm just trying to give you a little few tips and tricks here there to help you out in protecting yourself.
I think it's a good thing. Honestly, you know, there are many reasons why our privacy is very much available for a lot of different individuals. Basically, we're trading off to be able to connect with everyone, right? And to connect with all these different apps and businesses and stuff. But there's also the Patriot Act in the US. Like, it's really difficult. I mean, you know, that's basically where the NSA is able to, you know, drop in on whatever it is you're doing on the phone or on the internet and whatnot. There are CCTVs around, you know, if you're living in a city, a lot of the streets are monitored by cameras and stuff like that. But I think, you know, in this world where we're all interconnected, we all want to be able to trust each other. I think that the best thing you can do, like you've said, is like just take responsibility for your own personal privacy in terms of.
And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. There's a few other things I did want to bring up. So we were talking about privacy when you're like searching online, how much information Google gains from that. There's a few other browsers and websites you can use. And I've tried them out and I'm not super impressed with them. I mean, Google's been refined now for decades and they got it really, really good. Their algorithm's perfect to find you exactly what you're looking for. But DuckDuckGo is another great search engine if you really don't want all the additional cookies and people to be all up in your business, like Google to actually put that into your history and then use that for advertising in the future. I think that's an important suggestion as well. The other one is Brave Browser. Quinn and I have been very big fans of it. Brave Browser is, you can get on your cell phone, you can get on your computer, and they do a better job of protecting you from any, basically these cookies are attached to you after you visit that website. And so it becomes a part of your history. And that indicates, that's why when you go on Facebook or on Google, you're getting suggested ads that are customized to you because of what you've already gone to on, you know, their other websites, because they know that you went to homedepot.com looking for a backpack, for example. Then when you go to Google, they're going to suggest to you the backpacks like crazy, or on Facebook, you'll see the backpacks all the time. And so if you want less of that to be following you around, try some of these other solutions. You can go more incognito. And I think that's a good way to be, because our data is very valuable. And sometimes it feels creepy when we're being watched that much.
Yeah, you're always being watched. I think that like that's the reality that we've all kind of accepted and traded off on. Like if you have a phone and your phone is always on, it is always listening to you. Yeah.
Well, you could turn that setting off too.
Maybe
that's something we should consider doing. But this is interesting. I think that it's going to become a bigger conversation piece in years coming. I mean, right now they're requiring 8 characters with a special character, a number, and capital letter, lowercase letters. I think it's going to get next level in the next few years, and we're going to see this become more prominent, and I think it's great to capture this in this period of time to see what we can do to protect ourselves moving forward.
Yeah. And I will give kudos to Apple for, you know, them really leaning into the whole privacy space, and it's going to ruffle some feathers. And actually, you know, it's better than regulation, honestly, when it comes to the data that's collected by apps on your iPhone.
Yeah.
I think that's something that a lot of people are just kind of starting to wake up to. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, how much anyone really knows about, and that's not what we're going to talk about. But I think what's really interesting in the latest update with Apple is that they're, I mean, Facebook's biggest fear right now is basically this update with Apple, where it's going to ask you, do you want the Facebook app to follow you to Safari or whatever else that you're going to do next on the phone? And of course, you're going to say no, probably. Right. Like, why are they following me?
Yeah, or
say
what's my incentive for them to follow? That's an interesting disruption opportunity.
That's a really good point. But like, that's what they've been doing.
Yeah,
that's what every single app does. If you don't have it closed, I mean, even if you do. So, you know, I think that the more we demand it, the more we prioritize it, the better off we'll all be.
Right. So go get your shields, go protect yourself, update your passwords. And we appreciate you all listening to us. We hope that we hopefully opened up your mind a little bit to a new level of protecting yourself, your friends, your family. And we hope you have a wonderful day. Feel free to subscribe, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you then. Bye.